to this football club.
Hello and welcome to the latest in the lockdown interviews here on Back of the Net, the AFC Bournemouth podcast. A very Merry Christmas to you. And in this episode, we've got an extended chat with former Cherries manager and player Kevin Bond as we tell some great stories of his footballing past. The stories coming up include the Man City and Saints days and then his three seasons at Bournemouth, from playing football to cooking bacon and eggs for a living. We talk about the BBC Panorama documentary, and in Kevin's own words, he says what they did was atrocious. His questionable managerial decisions, including letting Fletch go, the potential he saw in Eddie Howe, plus the time he invited Jeff Mostyn to watch a game before Abdul Jaffer relieved him of £20,000, and the rest, plus the Sports 6 charlatans as well. It was cracking to chat to Kevin, and with him was Jeff Hayward, Mr. Tiggs and Neil Dawson. Enjoy.
Here we have our guest tonight. It's not just me. I've also got Neil Dawson. Neil, welcome to the show.
Welcome, Jeff. Looking forward to it.
Good stuff. How are you? You all right?
Yeah, very good. Thank you. Very good.
Excellent. And we've also got Tony, Mr. Tiggs. How are you, Tony?
I'm really well, mate. Lovely to be here.
Excellent. Good to see you. Before we bring in our guest, please make sure you give this video a thumbs up and do subscribe if you are watching on YouTube. So, a player for Norwich, Man City and Saints, amongst others, this centre-back played 126 games for the Cherries over a four-year stint. He was involved in the England B setup, was a crucial part of one of the most famous managerial duos through the 90s and noughties, before becoming the number one at AFC Bournemouth in 2006, a time which was one of tremendous change for the club. It is, of course, Kevin Bond. Kevin, how are you? You all right?
I'm very well, thank you.
Excellent. How are you keeping in lockdown? Are you keeping busy?
Getting back in the same routine. We had got ourselves in a routine in the first lockdown. So we sort of slipped back into that quite easy. The difference is the weather was lovely in the summer and it's pretty grim at the moment. So we've got dogs, so we take them for a walk. And where we was out in shorts and T-shirts, it's now rain mac. But anyway, we're getting on with it. It's an unfortunate situation. No one's to blame, and we've just got to get through it. However, you know, whatever we have to do to get through it, we have to do it.
Well, we're really pleased that you can join us tonight. And in fact, first question is, earliest memories of football. What can you tell us about life growing up in the East End of London?
Yeah, probably my earliest memories. We lived literally a stone's throw from Upton Park. My father played there for 16 years, I think. And I used to go and watch them play. I've got faint memories of going to Upton Park and watching them play, going to the training ground at Chadwell Heath. Went to the cup final in 1964 when I'd have been about seven. I can remember that. So I do, I've got, and what I do remember is how much my father loved West Ham. He had opportunities to leave the club and go to other clubs. And he didn't do it. And he would say that was the best decision he ever made. He was sort of, apart from the last 2 years where he had a couple of years at Torquay United, he was like a one club man. And I think the togetherness that they had, it was also very different then, but the togetherness they had amongst the players and the families, you know, the wives as well, I can remember, was probably very different to where it is today. And I think, you know, he loved that environment and loved his colleagues and had no desire to leave West Ham.
Kevin, you first came to Bournemouth with your dad in 1970, and obviously your dad's legendary in the town for putting together probably one of the great five sides that we've had in our history. And, you know, his one was the second one, I think, after the cup cup running one in the 1950s. What are your early recollections of moving to Bournemouth and that team in particular and your dad's role with it?
Yeah, it was, well, for a start, moving down to Bournemouth from being in the East End of London was such a different environment, you know, very green, where up in, it was just concrete up in London. So it was very different from a personal point of view, and lovely. We didn't take us very long at all to realise that this was like, you know, heaven by comparison to where we'd live, with no disrespect to the East End, but it was wonderful. And we all loved our time down there. My father was just had a season, I think, as first team coach at Gillingham. So was keen to embark on a managerial career and was really enthusiastic about the job, brought Kenny Brown down here alongside him, who he knew very well from his West Ham days. And they set about trying to put together a team. And, you know, they assembled a really good side, as you guys know, one or two old players from West Ham that they brought down here as well. And it was such a energizing, I don't know if it's the right, energizing time. It's so much change. I know we spoke about this when we spoke briefly over the weekend. They changed the colours, they changed the name, they changed, and all of a sudden Bournemouth were being written about in the papers, you know, for all sorts of reasons, but mostly because they were doing really well on the pitch.
I think what was really interesting was the way he sort of thought about the psychology of the team. So he got them to wear a kind of AC Milan kit and gave them a continental name, didn't he?
AFC Bournemouth rather than Bournemouth and Boscombe. Yeah, it does. It's got a more of a modern ring to it. And, you know, all credit to the people involved. Harold Walker, who I know my father said was a wonderful chairman, a wonderful man who was in charge at that time. And it was, you know, Bournemouth were, you know, literally they seemed to be a club that were going places at the time. And I know the players enjoy playing there. They had a really good team. The front two of Ted and Phil Boyer was fantastic, you know, fantastic combination. And good to watch. And, I can nearly sort of give you the team from them days. It was a really good time.
Good job we did change the name, because we wouldn't have had anything to sing about, because we could never find a song that fitted Bournemouth and Boston. Tony, sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, of course, you would have watched a lot because you were part of the youth team at the time. Yeah. What was that like? What, you know, being part of that?
We had some good youngsters. You know, they were, but that was the other thing that the. Reg Tyrrell was the chief scout at the club and brought in youngsters back in them. I know his son Clive, who's still around Bournemouth these days, who I know really well, was in charge of the recruitment, and they had good coaches. John Sainty was my coach when he was taking the youth team in them days. And we had, you know, I can't recall whether Bournemouth had any type of youth policy before my father went there, but certainly once he became involved at the football club, that he was all for bringing the youth team and bringing younger players through. And we had, you know, produced players, the likes of Kevin Reeves, went on to be a £1 million player, played for England. So it was, you know, it was a good time to be involved at Bournemouth.
And in that first season, Kevin, we won promotion, I think, from Division 4 to Division 3, old Division 2 to Division 1, yeah. And then narrowly missed out on promotion the following season, which would have been quite remarkable to do back-to-back promotions. That missing out on promotion, that was probably a factor in your dad moving on, wasn't it? Because he must have been gutted to just miss out at that time.
Yeah, he would have been gutted, but he would have, you know, his focus was only, you know, would have only been at Bournemouth at that stage. I mean, he can't move unless there's a club that wants him, you know. So he wasn't orchestrating anything. I know there had been rumours about Norwich before they appointed the previous manager, that came to nothing. But so they'd obviously got my father in their sights, and obviously they'd had a good start and hit the post the second season, and then I think started the third season really well. And so, you know, I think because he did well at the football club, he was being looked at by other football clubs. And, you know, I suppose when the opportunity to come and join what was in them days a Premier League club, it was a situation that he felt he couldn't turn down.
That would have been, I guess, around about that time that you started to make it as a player. What's it like coming through a side with your dad as manager? I guess you get bits of the best of both worlds, don't you? You get a bit of support, but also I bet he was harder on you at times than others. And to be fair,
yeah. I was lucky to have I had my father who was a manager. I was a real late developer, I left school at 15 in Bournemouth, and I don't know, 5'5" and 8.5 stone. I was a little real late developer, and there were not many people thought that I would ever really make it. People at Bournemouth really didn't think I would make it. My father, who was a manager, was able to give me an opportunity that I would have definitely not got anywhere else, without a doubt. But because he probably knew me better than anybody else, he saw something in me. I had one or two attributes I think he saw in me, and he probably thought that if you work on them, you might be able to make something of yourself. So he gave me the opportunity where other people wouldn't have done, and I will be ever grateful for him, because otherwise I wouldn't have ended up having a career in football. But it was difficult in the early days, because I was struggling to hold my own, if the truth be known, and it wasn't until I started to physically develop, which actually happened latterly when I went to Norwich, that I started to be able to hold my own. And people used to think that I was playing for not for reasons, because of my father being the manager.
And of course, your father being your manager, that was great. But then later on in your career, there's a famous game, and we mentioned it before very quickly, Kevin, but yeah. the 6-0 against Man City, when your dad was the opposition manager and you were playing, what was that like?
Yeah, not very pleasant at all. That was fourth or fifth round of the FA Cup. It wasn't a game I was relishing, I must be honest. And we went up to Main Road and took a real hiding, got beat 6. I was pleased for my father. It was a difficult time for me at Norwich at that stage, I must be honest. My father had left, and it was a little bit acrimonious the way he'd left. And, I think they knew that when my father joined Norwich, he took 4 or 5 of the Bournemouth players with him. They didn't want the same thing happening when he went to Manchester City. And, maybe they thought that I might be going. And I'd done okay at Norwich. So they weren't really keen for that to happen. So it was becoming quite difficult for me at the end of my time there. And then after playing a game like that, and I think it culminated with Man City making the cup final, that really well-known cup final against Spurs in 81. They went on to get to the cup final.
Did your dad make a habit of acrimonious moves in management, Kevin? He didn't exactly leave Bournemouth with his reputation, sort of flying very high. And I wonder, did that affect how you felt about the town?
No, it didn't affect. He loved it. He loved it. We all loved it. Had the most fantastic memories. I mean, he left the football. It's part and parcel of football, guys. Managers leaving, players leaving, is absolutely part and parcel. I know the supporters don't like it because it's their club, but he left to go to Norwich because it was, at that stage, it was seen to be a step up going from Division One to Division One to the Premier League, and who could blame him? And also taking 4 or 5 players who probably would never have ended up playing anywhere other than Division One at the best, ended up having nearly all of them did really well at Norwich City in the Premier League. And, you'd be hard pushed to be critical of those. They got the opportunity and all wanted to go. I understand, managers, the only people who are really, really loyal at football clubs are the supporters. Everybody else, will kiss the badge 1 minute and they'll be gone the next. That's the real truth of the matter. And he had to move on and did what was best for him and did what was best, or what he thought was best for Norwich City. And ultimately the same thing happened when he went to Manchester City, or that, although I understand it didn't sit well with everybody all of the time.
When you were one of the pioneer players that went and did America, because I think you went across to Seattle Sounders. That was an amazing time, wasn't it? Because it was a mixture of like world greats and sort of people coming from England, all different levels. What was it like being part of that? Did you play against any of the greats? How was the whole experience for you?
Yeah, it was a fantastic. I went there for one season, which was sort of March until September, so hardly missed any of the UK season, the English season at all. I went to Seattle, which I'd been to see a friend of mine who played for them the season before, John Ryan. It's a lovely, lovely city, you know, great facilities. The stadium, which at the time was the Kingdome, held, you know, 70,000 people, and it held the American football, it held the basketball team and the baseball. They all played it there and just adjusted the stadium. And we were getting 30,000 people watching us. We had the likes of Alan Hudson, who you'll remember playing for us. Bruce Rioch played for us. It was a good time. I think American football has had its peaks and troughs. And it's sort of historically people, you know, although it wasn't, certainly wasn't the case, hopefully in my case, people would go there maybe at the back end of their, more at the back end of their career, which is certainly not the case now. But it was a wonderful experience. Steve Daly, who was a record signing for Manchester City. There was a big Derby County connection because Alan Hinton was a manager who was a prolific player for. And it was good. Played against George Best. You know, we played against Carlos, the Brazilian right back, but very much at the back end of his career, and went to nearly everywhere around America. So the experience was absolutely wonderful. I loved every minute of it.
Brilliant. When you came back, did you make a decision that you were going to come back to try and work with your dad again, or how did it come about you came back so quickly? Because you're only there for about a season, weren't you?
I stayed there for one season, and I knew when I went the deal was done in such a way that I'd left Norwich City, went to Seattle Sounders, and at the end of that season, whenever the season ended there, that I would go back to Manchester City. I think Seattle had bought me, but they'd also got a deal, which was not, you know, nothing untoward or underhand, but they'd already got a deal in place where I would be sold back at the end of their season back to Manchester City. So I knew what was in front of me. When I went out there, I knew that at some stage, whenever the season ended in America, I'd wind up back at Manchester City. So it was a really exciting time for me, leaving Norwich. And I love Norwich. We had, the best time to be a youngster. We had, again, we had lots of good youngsters. Justin Fashanu, Kevin Reeves was there. Lots of good youngsters. I could reel them off who ended up making careers of the game, who were all really trying to push for, an opportunity in the first team. And we all worked hard and hopefully fed off of one another. So I loved it at Norwich City. But at the end of that season, I had America, a spell in America to look forward to. And then the prospect of going back to Manchester City again, which was a great opportunity for me.
And then you went on and you signed for Southampton after that?
Yeah, signed and for... Then... Sorry, carry on.
And then I don't want to talk about them too much. And then you came back to us, Kevin, which is fantastic. With Harry, what was the draw of coming to work with Harry?
I think coming to work with Harry. You know, I know. Coming to work with Harry, it was. I could have stayed at. You know, I was, to be honest, I was under no pressure to leave Southampton at the time. We'd done okay. You know, Chris Nicol was in charge, but I think they had bought a couple of centre halves. They bought Russell Osman. They bought a couple of centre halves, and I would never ever, as much as I was lucky to play for Southampton and in the what is now the Premier League. So I was really lucky, and I wanted to stay there as long as I can. But I definitely wasn't going to want to stay there if I wasn't playing. And I maybe in the back of my mind thought, I can see the writing on the wall here, maybe I won't. But no, in fairness to Chris Nicol, he never ever said to me, you know, I'm bringing something that's good. He encouraged me and he said to me, Kevin, you can stay. But I just probably felt the time was right. I knew, and I think this was probably a big thing. Harry wanted me to come. He really wanted me to come down there. And they had a good side. You know, we'd got, they'd been, there was in the championship, they'd got, they had a good side. And I thought, yeah, at least it was literally down the road for me. Somebody who I knew extremely well. And so I thought it was a great opportunity for me. I'll hopefully go down there for a number of years. And so I was excited by it and was more than happy to take it up.
So just tell us some of those players that you played with, Kevin, in that side.
Well, Casey come down there, George Lawrence, Jerry Payton, Mark Whitlock came down from Southampton. Who else played with
Luther was there, wasn't he? Luther Blissett.
Luther Blissett, yeah, fantastic goal scorer, Luther Blissett. David Coleman, left back, bless his heart. I think he passed away, David. Yeah.
Sean Teal as well.
Yeah, Sean was there, wasn't he, Neil?
Sean Teal, yeah. What a good, strong, powerful centre half. Yeah, really good. Sean O'Driscoll, I played with. They had a good team, you know. Really good team.
One of the things I can remember around that time was you used to play. Sometimes you play at right back. Sometimes you play at centre back, and I always thought you looked happier at centre back than right back. Is that my memory? I was young at the time. My memory playing tricks, or is that correct?
Yeah, no. To a large, you're probably right. I mean, I started as a real young right back. I started there, and then it was John Benson. Funnily enough, well, after I'd been at Norwich for a little while, John Benson. I think he said it to my father before he mentioned it to me. He said, why don't you have a look at centre-half? And I wasn't in the first team or anything in at that stage. And so I played a few games and sort of took to it, really. Especially, I was small initially, so I would have never been big enough to have been a centre-half. But then as I grew and ended up, you know, over 6 foot, it lent itself more to probably a centre-half role than a right-back role. And then end up playing probably most of my, you know, really important times probably at centre-half. Mm-hmm.
What's your favourite memory, Kevin, of that time?
I think overall, for my football career, I think my happiest memory is the fact that I had, you know, I was lucky enough to play a whole load of games, thankfully at a really good level. And it was really difficult for me early on, very difficult for me on, and a lot of doubters, doubted myself, got to be honest. So I think in the end, to have had a career, to be able to prove my father, bless him, right in giving me the chance, and that has stuck with me even now. When you look at youngsters, and we're very quick to, you know, and I am too. You look at them, you think, no, he's no chance, or he's not. But you've got to remember, you look at myself. You just given the opportunity, and given time, people can surprise you. So For myself, I was just really grateful overall to we never, you know, I never played for any clubs that was able to win cups. You know, Liverpool were winning everything, and we had a fantastic, you know, the first season I went to Southampton, we had a great season. They'd struggled for the first half dozen games, ended up having a great season, finished in Europe at this end of the season, was so looking forward to that, going to play in Europe. And it was 85. It was the year of the Heysel Stadium disaster, which was terrible. And everyone got kicked out of Europe for a number of years. And that was it. So that was the end of that. And, you know, we had the possibility, the FA Cup or the League Cup to look forward to. You had no chance of winning the league. Or if we, you know, it was a success for us to stay in the Premier League, or for Bournemouth to be in the champ. That was success, because you're never realistically going to lift a trophy. So I think having a career and playing as long as I did for the clubs that I did was the highlight of my career for me. Hmm.
You left us, I guess, at the end of it was three good years, wasn't it? I think that you stayed with us, and then you left at the end. Was Tony Pulis coming in? Anything to do with that?
No, I don't think so. I think there was a, you know, there was change at the football club. I think, you know, I was getting older, and I think they probably wanted to go in a different direction, which I understood. I was in my 30s, well into my 30s then. I completely understood that. So I, you know, I never looked into it anything more than, you know, that Bournemouth, as is their right, no longer really saw me as a way forward for them. And that was fine by me.
And is it true that you opened a transport caf when you stopped playing? Is that true?
Yes, I did. I did, yeah. I had a gentleman by the name of Bob Terris. Bob Terris runs Meacher's Transport. You may have seen their lorries going up and down the motorway, who I knew very well. I know very well. And he was really good to me at the back end of my career, really kind to me, very helpful, helped me out. And to cut a long story short, I ended up, with his help, I ended up opening a transport cafe on the Nursling Industrial Estate in Southampton. And, you know, if ever there was a rude awakening to what hard work was, that was it. I mean, I was getting up in the morning at 2 o'clock, getting in my car, driving to Smithfield Market in London. We ended up being really busy. And, you know, that was our work, going home every day smelling of eggs and bacon and what have you. But, you know, I didn't know what the future held for me. And so, I needed to work. So it was, you know, a time I'll never forget. My father, who had retired, used to come in. When he used to come down and stay with us, he'd living in Manchester, come down and stay with us. And when he'd come in there, he'd serve in the cafe with him, which used to bring a smile to one or two of the lorry drivers' faces, I must say. But they were good days.
Brilliant. And how did Alan Ball get in touch with you, Kevin, when he was the Man City manager? How did that all transpire? How did we go from there?
Well, I knew Alan, and I played for him. I played for him down at Exeter. Obviously, he'd been at Southampton, but before I was there, but I knew Alan, and he was just such a lovely, proper football man. And I bumped into him at the races one day, and he came over to me. Actually, it was in a car park after the race. He'd come over to me, and he had just left Southampton and gone to Manchester City as a manager the previous end of that previous season. And he said to me, "How would you fancy being a coach at Manchester City?" And I mean, I'm just, yeah, of course, I'd love to. He said, "Okay, I'll be in touch." And that was it. And he walked off. And I'm going back now, going back to my transport cafe, opening up early in the morning. And I just couldn't wait for the phone to ring. And it was like 2.5 weeks after I remember speaking to my dad. I said, "Should I ring Alan?" No, you can't. Don't leave it alone. If he wants to ring you, he'll ring you. So I left it. And then he did ring me. And within a fortnight, the cafe had gone. And I was up at Manchester City taking the reserve team.
I've just got this funny picture of you, Kevin. You're serving a bacon roll and you're telling the fella, "Oh, I won't be here next week. I'm going to go coach at Man City." It must have been such a change.
Pep Guardiola had the same feeling, didn't he?
Yeah, I know.
When he was running that tapas bar in Barcelona, he had the same.
Not quite the same. But so that was the best phone call I'd had for some time, I must say.
And how was it? Because they had a few managers that season, didn't they? Alan Ball didn't last that long.
No, I think Alan had gone three games into the season or something. He was treated really harshly, you know, really harshly. And he had gone. I'd only been there 4 weeks or something. There were 6 weeks. Alan had gone, and Steve Coppell came into the football club, brought Phil Neal in with him. I didn't know, knew of Steve, but I didn't know him. Just kept my head down and taking the reserve. I hardly ever, you know, he had, you know, bigger fish to fry. So I hardly said two words to him in the period of time that he was there. And then after 6 weeks, you know, it wasn't for him, and it was difficult. So he called it a day. I mean, the club didn't. It was Steve who called it a day. So he gave Phil Neal an opportunity, and he was there for a matter of weeks. And then he went. And then I think they gave it back to Tony Book and Asa Hartford, who I knew both those guys really well from my days playing there. And they took control for a period of time and steadied the ship, or tried to. And then they appointed Frank Clark. And so I'd had, you know, we'd had like five managers or something. We weren't even in November.
So Pedro Watford.
I know. It was unbelievable. And then, And then I lost my job at the end of the season. So, you know, I lasted till then, but at the end of the season, I was shown the door, which is a way in football, or can be. And, you know, just shows you the precarious nature of this industry.
Was that was around about the time that Harry came calling, I guess, wasn't it? Or, but that started with your relationship with Harry. How did that come about?
It would have been a couple of years later, just really, you know, very, very quickly. After that, I'd moved from Southampton and Bournemouth, where I'd been living during the playing days, and I moved back up to Manchester. I knew it because I'd played up there previous, but I moved up. And so I didn't know what I was going to do at that stage. I had no idea when I left Manchester City. Ended up getting a job at non-league level at Stafford Rangers, which was a brilliant experience for me at the non-league level, where you have to do everything. You're not just the manager, you deal with everything. And that where they were great people. And I'll never forget that, but really thankful for the opportunity. And at the end of one season with those guys, Alan Ball had got the manager's job at Portsmouth and asked me to go back there with him as his coach, which I did, which was great because I'd kept my house in Southampton. So I was back to where, and living back in my house again, and sort of pretty much that's where we stayed ever since. But I stayed with Borley, and then Borley ended up leaving after a while there. And a little while later, Harry took over, and I went back there again with. I've been to Portsmouth about 5 times, I think, all in all. And went back there with Harry after having had a short spell as his European scout up at West Ham. I worked for him. He was when he was at West Ham, and then he left West Ham, and I followed him down to Portsmouth.
So what was that like? Must have been a lot of fun, wasn't it, working with Harry?
Yeah, fantastic. A fantastic time. It was, it'd gone in there in the summer, felt like, you know, Milan Mandrić was a ambitious man. And he wanted, there was only one thing on his mind, and that was promotion. And Harry pretty much changed the team. He would have, you know, the starting 11, he would have changed 8 or 9 of them from the previous season. It's very difficult putting a team together in one summer, but he put together, you know, what turned out to be a terrific team, got promotion of the first time of asking, took Jim Smith along, who was a really great move, you know, legend at Portsmouth. And I was just tagging alongside those guys. And it was just a wonderful experience for me. They had some really good players and ended up, you know, we won the league. I think Harry would say to you today, they were as happy a time as he's ever had in football. Been lucky to be at the Tottenhams and places, West Ham in the big leagues and what have you. But I know he absolutely loved his time at Portsmouth, especially the year that he took him up.
And then it was, you followed him to Southampton and then back to Portsmouth, didn't you? So you were like a, you became like a duo, a dynamic duo of management, weren't you?
Yeah, well, he went, you know, that was okay for me because I'd played there. So I went back to, and that turned out didn't, you know, that was really regrettable. Last day of the season, couldn't quite keep them up at Southampton, which was heartbreaking, really heartbreaking, as I know it was for everybody at Southampton. Probably not quite so much for the people at Bournemouth and Portsmouth, but it was for the for the Southampton guys. And I think Harry very quickly the following season, I think Milan Mandrić must have, you know, would have asked him, do you fancy coming back to Portsmouth? And he said, yeah. I mean, obviously from my point of view, I had no future with Southampton once Harry had gone and what have you. So, you know, Harry was good to, and just sort of took it that I would go, will you come along with me? Yeah, of course I would. And they was in real trouble, looked like they were nailed on to get relegated, and Harry kept them up.
That time must have been really tricky, living in Southampton, moving between Southampton and Portsmouth. I mean, you know, the fans don't get on that great, do they?
No, it was horrendous. I'm sure it was worse for Harry than, you know, as the manager and the main man, than it was for me, but it was horrific. I was getting all sorts of phone calls and abuse everywhere you went. You know, from Portsmouth once you'd moved to Southampton, and then once you'd gone back to Portsmouth from Southampton, I'm getting it from both angles, and it was for a time, you know, a really really difficult, and as you say, with getting all sorts of abuse.
Was he, Harry Redknapp, everyone always talks, so we've had him on here, he was brilliant on here. Everyone always talks about him as being like a great man manager and a motivator and letting players do what, you know, express themselves. But he has to be a better tactician, hasn't he, than people sometimes give him credit for. What was your view on him?
Yeah, he was, yeah. He was, you know, he's really astute, knows the game inside and out. But what he's able to do is he doesn't shackle the players. He's never really, he will give them freedom in terms of letting them express themselves. They get direction. All of the players get direction. The team got direction. They know what's expected from them collectively, individually. But he doesn't say you don't do this, you do that. He lets people play. He lets players take responsibility. And I think for the most part, players really enjoy that. Really, nearly everybody who I came across really enjoyed playing under Harry. Don't get me wrong. I took some horrendous half times from him. Both as a player and a coach, I might tell you. But you know, he knew when he needed to get stuck into you. He knew how to. But he was a very, very astute man. Really good at knowing, you know, how to deal with him differently to how to deal with him. He was very good at that. But you know, really, really tactically clever and astute. We had, I think the most important game at Tottenham was the game that we played to see the second season when we qualified for the Champions League. We played away midweek at Main Road, at Manchester City. And it was like, if we won, then we was going to get the fourth spot. If they won, they would have got fourth spot. You probably remember. And Harry would ask all of the people whose opinions he hopefully respected, his coaches, Joe Jordan, myself. And he would think about it. And he'd, what do you think? And we'd talk it through. And the big thing is, are we going to go there and play one up front or two up front? We're playing away at Man City. And I think the consensus was that you're better off going there, trying to get one up front, trying to keep in the game, and then depending on where we are late in the game. So that was probably most people's perception on how it was. And he thought about it and thought about it. And it wasn't until he named the team, literally. I think the people knew pretty much who was going to play, but it was how we was going to play. Anyway, we played two up front. He played Jermaine Defoe and Peter Crouch, and we ended up beating them 1-0. And I think, you know, that it says a lot about Harry, and not just, you know, he is fearless, can be fearless, but not in a silly way, really thoughtful and underestimate, but he has a reputation for being good old Harry and this, that and the other. But in my opinion, far more astute than he's ever been given credit for. And in my opinion, would have made a brilliant England manager, but unfortunately never got given the chance.
Agreed.
So then there came a bit of a difficult time in your career, Kevin, and I think it's ironic that we're talking to you this week when a certain TV program's in the news. How does it feel to have so much in common with Princess Diana?
Yeah, the Panorama you're talking about.
You could say that, yeah.
Yeah, that was the most awful time for me. Panorama making all sorts of suggestions and completely untruth. And, you know, I just tried to defend myself in the end, but I probably made a big mistake trying to defend myself. But I did in the end. It was the most awful period of time for me. And to a degree stays with me to a large degree. And I'll never forget that. It was awful. What they did was atrocious. You know, so it's not a subject to be truthful, guys. I'd like to dwell on too much to be truthful.
Well, to be honest, Kevin, I think this week, you know, the way they behave is coming under the spotlight. You know, they're as bad as the tabloids in many ways, I think. So I wouldn't worry about that.
I think you know, entrapment. Call it what you will. How that can be allowed or, you know, above board. I don't know. Escapes me. But there you are.
So, Moving on to happier times for Bournemouth, your big return. How did it come about? Who got in contact with you? What were your first thoughts?
I applied for the job. Sean had left, had done fantastic for Bournemouth over so many years. Really well, produced players, produced a really good footballing team, always played great stuff. But they was, you know, there was, they were struggling. I think when they were third or fourth bottom when I joined the club, and probably Sean sensed that it was, the time was right for him to move on and left. There's an opportunity there. Obviously, I've got a lot of history with the football club, and I thought, you know, and that would be a great move for me. So I applied for it, and it took a little time. Took a little time to happen. Had a couple of interviews. I didn't know Abdul, the chairman at the time. But got on really, really well with him. Nice guy, and thankfully they gave me the job. So I was, you know, very, very grateful for the opportunity and love my time there. You know, the club changed during the period of time that I was there, in terms of, you know, I knew we weren't flush with money when we was there, and understood the situation, but during my period there, become dire. You know, financially, culminating with the club going into administration. So it became very difficult. And then in the end, a change of ownership, wanting to go into a different direction, culminated with me leaving, which I understand.
Yeah, it was an interesting time, wasn't it? And I don't think anyone was fully aware of the club's financial position. It's interesting that you say that coming in as manager, you knew it wasn't great, but you didn't know it was getting that bad. Do you think when you came to manage us, does it create extra pressure managing a club that you have bonds with and you might care about more?
No, I don't necessarily think it. I don't think it was any harder. And it can be done. You know, we in my second season there, nearly got back the 10-point deduction we had for going into administration. I think we ended up going down on the last day of the season. We'd recouped all but one or two of the points, the 10-point deduction. So had it not been for administration, we'd have comfortably stayed in the league. But you know that it wasn't to be. I loved it. It was a challenge, but Eddie took over the following season, or that, you know, sometime after. I know Jimmy Quinn took over a period of time, and Eddie took over. And he, you know, his hands were tied behind his back also. He had difficult circumstances, and he got through it and managed to make a success of it. And it, you know, I think taking the club over to, you know, second division, first division, quite often they're in a dire situation. You'd not very often take over a successful or a thriving club. It's because they're not doing so well for whatever reason. And it was the same with me. But you know, if you're there and you can hang on in there and you can gradually turn it around, as Eddie did afterwards, then I think there's still a good job to be done. It was difficult, and it became very difficult, but you can use all those things as an excuse why you fail or you don't do well. I wouldn't want to do that. It was a difficult time, but we very nearly managed, had it not been for that last day up at Carlisle United, to have stayed up, which would have been, in my world, it would have been the biggest achievement that I had ever had it or will ever have in football.
It was such a, I can still remember the day. It was so... We'd had such a fantastic run on the way up to it, and we played some great football. The game that always sticks in my memory as well, I don't know if you remember it, I think we beat Forest 2-0 at home, and you blooded Pittman and Vokes up front. And I remember going there and just seeing these two kids up front against Notts Forest. I remember saying to my dad, well, we haven't got much hope in this one. And we played amazingly that night. Great night under the lights. They both hit. It was, do you remember it?
Yeah, I remember it well. Colin Calder was the manager there, and I think that was a real coupon buster that night. I looked at him at the end of the game, and he, where on earth did that come? I've got to be honest. I looked at him and thought, where on earth did that come from as well? But it was, yeah, I do remember that in a night game, and I rung Harry. I used to ring, because Harry was so keen for Bournemouth to do, as he always has done. But I'd ring him up after every game on the way home, and he was like, he was just doing cartwheels. I could he jumping up and down. He was, you know, yeah, it was a. I remember that game really, really well.
And you gave people like Brett Pittman, Sam Vokes a chance. You gave Josh McCoy a chance as well. You know, young players really at the start of their career. You also brought in quite a lot of lone players. I mean, was it necessity or did you want to blood those players? How did the sort of balance of the squad work?
Yeah, I felt it, in hindsight, it was a mistake. In hindsight, I believe it was a mistake. I felt that so many of the players had been there so long and were comfortable. And it was a bit like a, you know, not a bit like a little nice club environment, little leisure club environment. No, not, but it was so many of the players had been there a long time. And it was, I just went there feeling, you know, one or two of these need to kick up the backside and think then your place is not necessarily safe. And so I was in a hurry, but with hindsight, I should have given one or two of them more of a chance under a different manager to show what they can do and maybe talk to them about the situation a little bit more. But I ended up bringing lots of people in, and with hindsight, that was a mistake. Or I felt with hindsight that was a mistake. One of the things that I do believe, and I'm sure Ed won't mind me saying it, one of the things that I do think might have helped Eddie when his early days when he took over at Bournemouth is I think it was a transfer embargo initially, and he couldn't sign any players. So he never had that worry to worry about. He never had any worry. He didn't have any worry about who should I bring in if you could. You know, Abdul was really keen. For me, if you could, don't worry. He said, we'll find a way of paying for them, Kevin. If you speak to Harry, because Harry was at Portsmouth, if you can get some good loan players. And so he was encouraged me, but I'm not blaming anybody else. I was keen to try and make some changes and galvanize the place a little bit. So, but I went too far and brought too many in, and I recognize that now. But I think, as going back to Eddie, I think not having that to worry about at all. And I think what it did is it helped him create a much stronger mentality, siege mentality, if you like, at Bournemouth, where, you know, we are what we are. We can't strengthen. We're going to get where we are with what we've got. And I think that helped him to focus on directly what was in front of him rather than have to worry about getting players from wherever or letting players go. I think that probably helped him certainly initially.
Yeah, we probably need to talk about Darren Anderton, don't we? Because he was a player at that time who I remember when he joined, I thought, oh, here we go, another one that's coming down to sort of like toss it off for a little bit by the seaside. But he works for a player of his talent. I remember just he worked so hard, and that's what impressed me about him was that he didn't have to, but he was often the hardest working player on the pitch when he had the least to prove. Was he a joy to manage? Or
he was a fantastic guy. It would not not a minute you didn't know he was there. Not a minute's problem. Not a scrap of problem. Come in every day. Never really asked for any time off. You know, such a good player. You know, he was such a good player. And, I mean, he packed it in, I think, because he wanted to pack it in, and he didn't really like, maybe he didn't like Bournemouth then. He could have played for as long as he wanted. You know, he was fit. He didn't carry any weight. He wasn't sort of blessed with any great pace at that stage. So it weren't like he was going to lose his pace. He could have carried on for as long as he wanted. And he was, you know, to find a role in him, a free role in behind a striker or something. He was such an intelligent player. And he was a real joy to deal with. Not a minute's trouble. Not a minute's trouble.
I always think that, obviously, Jimmy Quinn and him didn't see eye to eye, and we could all see that. And then he ended up with the ignominy of being dropped and watching players, one-eighth as good as him, playing in front of him. And I always remember he came on in his last game in about the 93rd minute, and he scored from 20 yards, and he hit the ball so hard, I always thought he was probably kicking Jimmy Quinn's arse. It was good.
Yeah,
Tony,
he wouldn't know how to kick up, Darren. It's just not in his nature. He's not like that. He was... And I think probably that was how it was. If he didn't like what was happening at the football club and he thought, I don't want any more of this, he just quietly decided to hang up his boots. But it was a real credit to himself, being an England player, superstar player, coming down to Bournemouth, not giving it the large at all, coming down there. And all the players loved him. All the players loved him. It was a real credit.
One of the players who went the other way, Kevin, when you were with us, was the big man, was Fletch. I didn't realise he... I'd only looked the other day at this in preparation for this interview, in that he hadn't actually scored. He scored like one goal in the last 40-odd games or something. You know, why... But obviously, he was a big character at the club as well. Was that a hard decision to make?
It was. I suppose it was hard. But I sort of felt that, you know, he was, when you got Fletch, you end up playing a particular way because you got Fletch. In my mind, he sort of dictates how you go about things. And we'd had years and years of it. And I thought he weren't scoring bundles of gold. And I thought the people around me, my coaching staff agreed. It's time for change. It's time for change. But, you know, there we are. It was 18 months, 2 years later, he comes back and does great again for God knows how long, you know. But so, you know, I could have easily been. But it was those decisions and that probably the change of Bournemouth, where, you know, so many people were synonymous with Bournemouth Football Club, Fletch was, and I just thought we need a new era, if you like, and to change. I think I was trying to change too much too soon, but it was a decision that I felt was right for us at the time, and just a decision I made on my own. I think other people around me concurred with that as well, but you know. Maybe I was wrong. You know, it looks like a little while later, Eddie brought him back and he ended up, it was just a reunion and he galvanised the club and he gave everybody a lift, I think, by coming back again. And I've got to say, great credit to Steve. I mean, he just looked after himself amazingly well and, you know, carried on year after year.
Another player, Kevin, was Neil Moss. You dropped for some young unknown bloke called Asmir Begovic.
He's back.
It's Asmir Begovic. I knew Asmir from Portsmouth. I thought Asmir's going to be a top goalkeeper. I thought he's going to be a top goalkeeper, and he's big, and he's going to be great. And it was one of the case we're talking about. You know, changing people. Did I need to do it? I didn't need to change Mossy. Mossy hadn't done anything wrong, really. I hadn't done anything wrong. But in my mind, I'd got the availability of getting another goalkeeper for next to no money for a period of time, who in my mind, at that stage in their careers, was going to be a much better goalkeeper than, with all due respect, Mossy. And I thought, why am I going to not improve my team if I can improve my team?
Yeah.
And so that's what I did. Remember my first game where he played really well in 0-0 draw up at Notts Forest, first game of the season. I thought, that was great. And then... It was. I'd never forget it. I'm sure it was Carlisle at home. I'm pretty sure it was Carlisle at home. They got a free kick on the halfway line, clipped it into our 6-yard box, and Asmir was so big, he didn't even have to jump to catch the ball. And anyway, he jumped and caught the ball and went back. And as he went back, the ball hit the crossbar and bounced down. And one of their guys headed it in. We got beat 1-0. He had no chance after that. The supporters were on to him and he stayed for a period of time and we had to send him back. But it was hard work. Mossy will tell you. It was hard work. It was the first game of the season and I never spoke to Mossy until the day before. We was up at a hotel training and I said, we was on the training pitch. He said, Mossy, I need to speak. No, you're not going to do that, Gaffer, are you? He knew what was coming. And what do you say? I am. But Mossy was brilliant.
That's good. Well, Asmir's back now and doing this stuff, so no harm done. Obviously, the big intriguing link really comes with what you saw in Eddie Howe, because Eddie Howe says he owes you everything. Some of the players around at the time said he was the least likely manager when they were playing with him. They would never have put him down to be a manager. Clearly, you saw something. What was it that you saw? Because whatever you saw, we owe so much to now.
What I saw in Ed, Eddie is really thoughtful. You know, Eddie, a very, very deep thinker about the game. You can tell by watching Eddie play that Eddie knows the game. He was like a poor man's Bobby Moore. He read the game. He weren't the biggest, but he was a really excellent footballer. And you know, you knew that he understood the game. I saw that, knew that we'd had him at Portsmouth, where he had a horrific injury and couldn't play the games he wanted to play. And so I knew he was really struggling with his knee, and it was so difficult for him because Eddie wouldn't be the type of guy just to turn up, take your money. He knew he wasn't able to do himself justice, and he was talking about packing the game in because he didn't know how much longer he could just carry on and not be the player that he knew that he ought to be. And I thought about it, and I just thought, well, you know, he's a Bournemouth man. At the time, there was only me and what's his name? Who's my coach? His name escapes me. And there was just the two of us at the club. I mentioned it to the people at the football club, and they were all for it. And I must say, from my point of view, I thought Eddie was ideal. I knew that he was keen. He loved his football. I would have been really surprised when I asked him if he said no, he didn't want to do it. Mm. And you know, and I don't think he would have done it for any other reason or took the job for any other reason. And I think he really thought that was a path he wanted to go down. And I just had a feeling that he would take to it. And after a short period of time, I watched him and with Rob Newman. I'm thinking him and Rob Newman would go out and do a little bit on their own, and he would take. And I could see straight away that he was a coach. In no time at all, he'd give him two players to coach or four players to coach. He'd come up with an idea and take them on his own, and he'd come up with some great sessions. So, I had a pretty good idea that he knew what he was about.
You can't have thought in your wildest dreams, though, could you, what he actually did then go on to do?
No, what I'd gathered or what I'd thought was important is that transition from being a player to being on the other side of the game is like you need somebody to give you that opportunity. And then when you've got that opportunity, then it's down to you to grasp it and make the most of it. And so to make that transition from a player to a coach. And so I had no idea where any of this would take him. I knew that he would be very thoughtful. I knew that people would like him. Whether he had needed to come out of himself a little bit more outgoing, but of course he has done. But I felt, I've given him the opportunity that he has, but in fairness to him after that, he's grasped it with both hands.
Do you think he would have done better, Kevin, if he'd had an opportunity to manage a transport cafe for a little bit first? Do you think that would have...
I think it would have helped him no end. 2 years getting up and down the road at 2 o'clock in the morning. My God, I've got to say, I don't. You know, the people in the footballing world, I don't think it'd do any of them any harm to have had a couple of years of that.
No, it wouldn't.
Yeah, very true, mate.
Do you know, Kevin? The more I think about what you've done for the club and what still, your legacy, I think you deserve a lot more credit because you actually introduced Jeff Mostyn to the club as well, didn't you?
I did, yeah. It was Jeff and I go back a long time. Jeff, I know from my days up in Manchester and everywhere. His wife and my wife are really close friends. And he used to come to all of the games. When I was playing, he'd come to watch me play. And then I kept being coach and went to Portsmouth. And he would come to all the games and watch us and loved it. And we had a great – absolutely loved his football. So – I think it was the very first game when I'm at Bournemouth. I said to Jeff, do you want to come along? And he was in the boardroom in them days. And he was sat next to Abdul. And I think by the time I took him home after the game, I think Abdul had relieved him of 20 grand by the end of the first game. I think he relieved him of 20 grand. And I think Jeff realised, because he thought, I'm going to go back next week now after this. I'm going to have to get my money's worth. So he went back the next week. And I think he very quickly realised that the only way he was ever going to get his 20 grand back was to give him another 20 grand. So, and anyway, before you knew where he was in for £500,000.
Bloody hell.
But what an investment. I mean, he's got his returns now, though. I mean, thankfully.
Yeah, it was, I think it was scary for Jeff. I mean, I know, because I do know, it was like the period where he was in charge when the club was in administration was such an uncomfortable, you know, because he was getting some flack himself, which he didn't deserve. So he was taking some criticism, which was unfair. And, you know, that he hadn't been in that world before, you know, doing what he had done previously, and, you know, had not been subjected to criticism from supporters and in the press and this, that and the other. It was very different for him. And he'd think, oh, I bet he could just get me out. I'm sure at times he thought, just get me out of this. But he couldn't get out. He was so far in, he couldn't get out. But thankfully for him, when the new owners came along, and he's got a great role at the club and done a great job for the club, and I couldn't be more pleased for him.
We're all very grateful. We're all very grateful. And just talking about that time when Sport 6, and because Abdul dropped out of the picture, Sport 6 turned up on the scene, you know, a couple of charlatans from up north, and you must have thought, where is all this going, didn't you, at that time?
Yeah, well, there was all sorts of, you know, from the moment that it was muted that they were coming to the club, there was all sorts of speculation about, you know, my time with company managers coming in and this. So you know that quite often there's no smoke without fire, and so I definitely thought that we you know, you need to keep winning, or you need to win in order to keep people at bay there. And it was difficult. I found it difficult at the end. We were struggling. And I think new people coming in quite rightly decide that they want to bring their own people in, which, you know, again, as much as it might not have suited me, completely part and parcel of the game. And I understand. So they'd had enough of me soon after the start of the following season and brought Jimmy in.
And Jimmy didn't do so well, Kevin. Did that bring a wry smile to your face? I know you're not a person to ill wish on anyone, but, I mean, it was pretty horrendous.
No, it didn't. I wanted to see Bournemouth do well. The irony of it is that Savvy, the owner, he rang me at Christmas time. It was around about Christmas time, and he said, things ain't working out here. Okay, I thought, what are you ringing me? Anyway, he said, things are not working out here very good. He said, we might be needing the managers very soon. What do you think? You know the club very well. And it was at that point I said to him, I would give the job to Eddie. Eddie had left, obviously, with me, but then gone back a short time after to work with the kids. And he said to me, what do you think? With no money or anything. I said, well, I'd just give Eddie Howe the job. You know, he wouldn't be about the money for Eddie. He's Bournemouth through and through. He would work. No one would work harder. Everybody at the football clubs loves him. I think the players would respond to him. And that was his first opportunity in management as such, and obviously never looked back.
Brilliant. Wow. And then for yourself, Kevin, I mean, obviously we know what happened after that. You had a spell in Hong Kong, which I hadn't realised as well. That must have been mad, because I know, Tony Pulis played out there, didn't he, in Happy Valley, and he's yeah. spoken about the what it's like with, you know, the Chinese and the gambling and stuff like that. What was it like?
I'd met the guy out there. I'd met actually when we was on a pre-season tour when we was at Tottenham. We toured China and Hong Kong and spent some time out there, and I got to meet the owner of a football club out there. And then it was after I'd left Queen's Park Rangers, he contacted me and said, could I do a presentation for some of their coaches out there, which I did. And then while I was there, he said, do you fancy taking my team? Because he had a team in what is their Premier League. And he said, would you go home and come back again and take my team to the end of the season? Which I said, yeah, I would. And And I really loved it. It's a really, you know, I passed through there a couple of times, but didn't know.
Amazing.
But it was just really vibrant, really safe, very clean place. And they were, you know, not, you can't confuse in any way Hong Kong with China. You know, Hong Kong is completely different. And the football is completely different. It's not the same level at all with like China. But it was super. You know, we had Brazilian players and Yugoslav players, and we had a successful season. And I was taking the team, and I actually went back out. I had another spell back in England, and then after that, he asked me if I'd go and take the team again, which I did, and I really loved my time there. It was wonderful.
How does it feel having managed so many clubs in the country? Do you still have the same enthusiasm you had when you started off coaching?
Yeah, I've been involved. I haven't managed so many clubs, but I've been involved with lots of clubs. I'd be right to say I've been involved with lots of clubs, and I'm still completely motivated by football. I don't miss a game. Watch everything on the telly. Get involved in lots of the webinars that we have forwarded to us from the League Managers Association. Take a great deal of interest in the new trends that are going on in football and the new ways that people are playing the game. I don't feel in any way like I'm, you know, other people may think, you know, we've had too much of him, but I still feel, young and enthusiastic and keen to carry on if I get given an opportunity.
When you were, I was thinking it's really interesting. I was looking back at, some of the players, you say, you know, you haven't managed the clubs, but you've certainly coached and been involved with them.
Yeah.
There's been some phenomenally tremendous players that you've worked with over the years. I was just looking back through some of the squads and, you know, you've got people like Luka Modric and, you know, just players that are not just excellent players. I mean, they're just beyond world class. A couple of questions for you, really. Number one, what's it like when you have to coach a player that great? Because you must just think, you must really question how you approach it. And number two, who would you say is the most talented couple of players you've worked with?
I would say in terms of talent, I've not worked with a more talented player than Adel Taarabt, who was at was at Tottenham with us and then went on to Queen's Park Rangers. I haven't had the opportunity to work with anybody who's got more ability than Adele. Yeah, the problem, in my opinion, for Adele is that I just don't think he made the best use of his ability.
No.
But he hasn't become what I believe he ought to be, given that he was just the most amazing. He was amazing footballer, what he could do with the ball. So he would be one, but sadly, I don't believe that he's fulfilled his potential. But in terms of, you know, Luka Modric was, and I think the thing about people like Luka Modric and Gareth Bale is that they are such nice people. There's no arrogance or about them at all. They're very humble. It's such lovely guys. They weren't, you know. I would go out there and put on sessions for these guys and what have you, and talk to them, and they would talk to you back in a really respectful way, and that was fine. I weren't about to be telling Gareth Bale out to zoom down the wing and do this, that. You know what I mean? No more than I'd tell Luka Modric out to drop a shoulder and not, you know. But I have to put on sessions every day. They know that, and they are great because they just got on with it every single day. Never a moan about it at all. They were, and I think they're partly maybe the best pros. The best players ended up being like the best pros and the easiest to handle. So they were a real, as you know, so many of the guys at Tottenham in particular, because that was probably the best level that we worked at. It wasn't really hard work at all. It was a pleasure working with them.
Is there any player that you felt you've really developed and helped and that you're really proud of in their career, or in your career rather?
Yeah, I would think, one or two younger players that I helped, you know, took little Max Gradle along when I was at Bournemouth. took him. I've got to be fair to both to Rob Newman and Eddie. They'd gone to see Leicester play in a pre-season friendly and watched him play. And we was looking for somebody to play out wide. And I hadn't seen him. They went, I was taking a game or something somewhere. They both went and watched him. And they both come back and said, Gaffer, you've got to take him. We'd only taken him on loan, but you got to take him, end up taking him, I think, for a year or something in the end. But yeah. So you've got to take him. He was such a bright character, such a smiley face boy. And he ended up becoming like almost like a son. I loved him. He had a tragic time when he was there. He disappeared for 5 or 6 weeks when I think it was his mother or died, or I think. And it was, he came back, all of a sudden he come back one evening, and we were playing Barrow in the Cup. He come back one day, and he turned up at 5 o'clock on the doorstep. He hadn't trained for 5 weeks. Mm. Anyway, he played, I said, I'm going to play him. He was having a difficult time. I said, I'm going to play him. I played him. He played 120 minutes and took a penalty, and it was just, and he was great. And I loved working with people like him. There was no side to him. Younger players, and one or two passed through my hands over the course of a period of time, and Brett Pittman was Eddie worked wonders with Brett Pittman. I found Brett a joy to work with, really good, and I watch him closely. He's at Swindon now. I watch him closely and stay in touch with him, to be fair. So it's taken a lot of joy out of watching these guys do as well as they have done.
Probably the most natural finisher we've ever had, I would say. We've had better players, but we've never had anyone that whenever he used to get put clean through, I used to stand up straight away because I knew where it was going. And he was, if he'd been a couple of yards quicker, I think he'd have had a great, top level career, wouldn't he? Superb.
Yeah, he was a real natural finisher, and made the most of what he's got. And I think Eddie will say that he takes an awful lot of satisfaction in helping Brett become the player that he ultimately become. And he was excellent. We had, for a few months, we had David McGoldrick down at Bournemouth when I was down there. And he was another, look how well he's done for himself. And we were lucky enough to have him for a period of time. And you could tell, I certainly think I could then, that he definitely had something, David, and he's gone on to be a great career for himself.
Yeah. Somebody wrote into us and said one of the lone players that we had was Frank Songo, ex-Barcelona.
Frank Songo, might have been the first lone player I took from Portsmouth not long after I'd been there. I probably prefer that you didn't mention that, to be honest.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, what are your plans now? I mean, do you stay in touch with Bournemouth? Are you still involved with people at the club? Obviously, Jeff Mostyn will still be a friend, but what about other people down there? Do you know JT very well? Do you give him advice?
No, I wouldn't be giving JT. I know JT, but I don't speak to, he's got enough on his plate. I used to go down there a couple of times when Eddie was in charge and watch them, just take interest in what's happening. And Eddie was always very welcoming. I'd go down there, and then obviously I'd see Jeff when I was there. And I know the girls and the people, all the people in the office and what have you still. But I'd like to go down and watch a game. I'd like to go down there on Saturday, but I can't. And I wouldn't want to, I'd be asking, can you go in there? But I would love to go and watch a game. I went down to watch a number of games before lockdown, and I'd like to look forward to the time when I can go back and watch again. But obviously it's very difficult at the moment.
Mm. Well, we wish you all the best, Kevin. It's been fantastic talking with you tonight. Brilliant. Thanks so much. It's like I say, I think the number of things that you helped the club achieve what it achieved. And I think it's really underrated, the contribution you've made, So thanks from all the fans. I think you've done a terrific job.
My very great pleasure. It's you have to pinch yourself when you think of, or when I think myself of the club that it was when I was a real young boy, just come down here with my father, to how it's evolved to the great years that they had under Harry, which were great years, fantastic years. and then the really difficult times. And then you look at where they, you know, where they currently are and where they've been the last 5 years as a Premier League club holding their own. It's just, I mean, you would have, you couldn't have made it up, could you?
You couldn't make it up. And how do you think we're doing in the Championship, and how do you think we will do this season?
I think you'll go up. I think you've got good. Yeah, I think you've got good player. You've got good players. You've got match winners. You've got good players. I know the season is still young, and lots of things can happen. But I believe Bournemouth will get promotion. You go straight back up again. I think they're a good team. You know, they've got some David Brooks. They've got some fantastic players down there.
Great. On that note, Kevin, I'm going to say goodbye because that's a really nice, positive way to end it. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin.
Bye-bye. Neil, thank you. Thanks for coming on.
That was a pleasure. Always a pleasure, Jeff.
And Tony, love those questions. Keep them coming.
We loved it. Thank you. Great.
So brilliant to chat to Kevin Bond there. I think that certainly settled a few scores, and the reaction, at least on our YouTube channel and on Facebook, was very positive. So superb to have him on. Well, that's it for another episode of the Lockdown Interviews. We appreciate your ears for the last hour and a bit. There are more interviews on the way, not least Matt Tubbs and Josh McCoy, two strikers for ASU Bournemouth that had so much potential, but in a red and black shirt, did they quite make it? Well, we'll speak to them to get their own opinion. Plus, there are more interviews on the way. So if you haven't subscribed, then please do so on your podcast app. And these are all watchable on YouTube. That's youtube.com/AFCB podcast. Remember, if you'd like to support us with a coffee, we would certainly appreciate it, given the fees we have to pay for our hosting with our streaming software and also the podcast platform. If you want to do so via a coffee, it's afcbpodcast.com/coffee. We really do appreciate any support that we can get. Anyway, again, happy Christmas, and we'll see you next time on the Lockdown Interviews.
Richie. Maybe on Walker.